Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. How are tricks with you? It's the 9th of October now. It's a good day. Peace in the air at last. We were due some positive news, weren't we? Even Fianna Fáil is at peace, it is reported. The WhatsApp is oscailte 087 032 32 32, and the email as well. That's oliver@rte.ie. And we have an uplifting show for you today to match the world mood right now in the direction of positivity. We're going to meet a former rugby player. Fergus Farrell is his name. And he has this incredible story of survival. He had a life-changing spinal injury just 7 years ago. It looked like he would never walk again. Spirit broken. Don't want to give much away what happens next, because he's going to be so good at telling a story. So hang out with us for the hour and you'll find out what happened next. 5155. One is the text. How was your full moon, by the way? I hope you had your loony side tucked away, because where the moon phase is now a waning gibbous. I was looking up this morning. Waning gibbous, also the phase of Micheál Martin's authority at the moment. He had a five and a half hour long meeting last night. Now, if ever there was a single email, could just finish a meeting. But look, he's very, very clever politically, I think. Because on Monday I saw him swaggering into the 6-1 studio with Sharon Tobin, and he appeared to spread the blame for the presidential fiasco in his party, avoided saying sorry, and that sent the TDs, oh, apoplectic. And then he meets them in private, the TDs and senators. He had the little quivering lip, the big tá brúnaithim, hands shaking, we're seeing in the reports. Looking like a Sacred Heart picture, basically, he was. But this moment of weakness was away from the cameras. So we got the swagger from on the telly and the weakness away from the cameras. And the TDs now couldn't, when they saw him nearly crying, they just completely forgave him straight away. And so the analysis around the place reckoning Jim O'Callaghan, who is basically just talked about as the next probable Fianna Fáil leader now, that he's going to need more time and justice. The Department of Justice is only there since January to mount his leadership bid. More likely around the swapsies time that they'll have, Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil, when the Taoiseach's office is swerved around in 2 years' time. God knows who'll be actually there. That's in November 2027, which feels a long, long way away, doesn't it? But the big news across the world is relief. It is relief that peace is, could be, probably, should be, probably will be on the way for Gaza. It's only days into those talks in Egypt. And Palestinians in Gaza, I'm reading the BBC, and the hostage families in Israel, they have been celebrating the breakthrough. They believe it. It was announced in the US overnight. And it is exactly 2 years and 2 days after Hamas started that war that it could not win. Murdered the Israelis at the music festival and in villages, terrifying Jewish people in the worst atrocity on them since the Holocaust. And the response from Netanyahu and his IDF forces, we know the deaths of over 60,000 Palestinians. It was a war he called self-defence, but known to much of the world as genocide and as famine. In fact, only yesterday I was reading in The Guardian, and they published this amazing feature online. I highly recommend it. The headline, Young Lives Cut Short on an Unimaginable Scale. The 18,457 children on Gaza's list of war dead, just 2 years. And they had very specific stories about small children, about what they were doing on the day, about almost groups of families and children dying on a daily basis. They said for the whole war, almost every hour, a child was killed, if you spread it out, the statistics. And that's one of the reasons that Ireland and other countries and the objective international community so horrified by Israel under Netanyahu and his extremist coalition allies. So hopefully the Americans have finally put the pressure on them. If it takes effect on Monday, then you'll have the release of hostages held underground by Hamas. There'll be the release of bodies by both sides. That's the really macabre aspect of this deal. We only know the rough details of it. There'll be the freeing of about 2,000 Palestinians held by Israel, over 200 of those serving life sentences. And then with all of that hopefully done, the withdrawal of IDF troops next week from the Gaza Strip. And if all of that goes to plan and happens, then you would have to give credit to Mr. Trump. The New York Times, a very harsh critic of the US president, saying today, President Trump is on the brink of the biggest diplomatic accomplishment of his second term. Of course, the first one first term, his biggest accomplishment was the Abraham Accords, which was normalizing relations between Israel and Arab states that had refused to recognize Israel as a state. But the New York Times points out much could go wrong in the coming days, and in the Middle East it often does. The peace deal that Mr. Trump is heralding may look like another temporary pause in a war that started with Israel's founding in 1948 and has never ended. But if he can hold the deal together, he will have done what many before him tried, outmaneuvered a difficult and isolated, now isolated, ally. And it describes all those attacks by Hamas. They kind of frame it as an effort by Hamas to stop Saudi Arabia recognising Israel in October 2023. They're the kind of last of the big states to do so. But also says Israel's levelling of Gaza and the talk of driving Palestinians from their refuge did huge moral and political damage to the Israeli state. That will take a generation or more to repair. Now, the timing, of course, is fascinating because this time tomorrow, in fact, it'll be 10 a.m. tomorrow, the Nobel Prize Committee, which has been handing out its annual prizes all week in various fields, medicine and physics and so on, it's going to announce its Peace Prize in Oslo. They're meeting right now. Four American presidents have won the Peace Prize in the past, though with far less lobbying than Donald Trump is doing. Theodore Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, Barack Obama and Jimmy Carter. And the BBC says the world's most powerful man wants the world's most prestigious award. It's as if he's become fixated on it. It's a long history from 1901. There are actually five recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize. Sean McBride, he was the leader of Clan Republika, Minister of External Affairs, and he shared it with a Japanese minister. And then they gave out the shared prize in 1976 to Mairead Corrigan McGuire and Betty Williams for their attempts to start peace initiatives on both sides of the divide in the north. And then, of course, John Hume and David Trimble shared it for the Good Friday Agreement in 1998. So Trump is looking for it. He's repeatedly listed off seven wars he says he's solved. Many of the claims are disputed. Some of the countries, in fact, he's listed are still firing on each other. So there is also that open discussion that if he doesn't get the Nobel Prize from Oslo, that he could lash out at Norway. The judging criteria is that the recipient has to have worked for Fraternity Between Nations. This wouldn't be good for the MAGA man because since he's returned to office, he's withdrawn America from the UN's World Health Organization, the Paris Climate Accords. He's attacked the UN. There's the open wish to take over Greenland. There's the open wish to annex Canada. He's been bombing boats in Venezuelan waters, trying to rename the Gulf of Mexico. Not exactly words and acts and deeds of international cooperation, are they? And then, of course, there's clampdowns on his own people, protests, critical journalists, academics and universities, deploying troops on cities run by his political rivals. Very non-peaceful. And I wouldn't say he would have cared less about the Nobel Peace Prize if the Egypts hadn't given it to Barack Obama in 2008, a few weeks after he was elected, before he was even president. Of course, he went on to be very jolly on the joystick with the drones. He bombed seven countries, Barack Obama, but he did look lovely in a suit when doing it. So they gave him the Nobel Prize. So it's very unlikely Trump. Also, the nominations closed in January when he was just weeks into office. So it seems unlikely he will be in the... But the pressure is on that group, isn't it? Next year would look good if Trump's peace plan for Gaza materialises, and the first phase we expect to happen on Monday with the release of hostages. But it materialises and holds in a year, then he would of course be a contender for the 2026 prize. And if there's still peace in a year, he'd be a deserving winner. But as of now, the pressure is intense on that Norwegian room. The BBC went into the room, same mahogany, same chandelier as 1901. Five people have always just gone around the same table to decide the award. They're doing it right now. Fierce stress on them, isn't there, all together. Now, it was quite a dramatic moment overnight when Donald Trump, he was holding a roundtable event with conservative influencers, and they were talking about how evil the Democrats are and all the usual stuff. When Marco Rubio, looking very stressed, comes into the room, skulks into the back corner. He tried to get Trump's ear because he was mid-flow, and then it didn't really work. So he sat down, and Donald Trump realised, well, there's something going on here.
Come on up here, Marco. Anything we should know about the Middle East?
That's what we're hoping to talk to you about here, Mr. President.
Yeah, I was just given a note by the Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East and they're going to need me pretty quickly. So I will take a couple of more questions.
So Marco, he had to sit down very comfortably. He's trying to get the eye of the president, eventually scribbles out a note, hands it to him. Of course, the photographers, Associated Press photographer Evan Vucci got the note. It said, "Very close. We need you to approve a Truth Social post soon so you can announce the deal first." And that's when he, you heard in the clip there, when he announced he's just got a note. And the Truth Social post goes out saying he's very proud to announce the first phase of a peace deal. It means all of the hostages will be released very soon. Israel will withdraw their troops to an agreed upon line as the first steps toward a strong, durable and lasting peace. Everlasting, in fact, is what he called it. And then he kept taking more silly questions from the conservative influencers before realising he needs to get out of this room and finish this deal.
I have to go now to try and solve some problems in the Middle East, although I'm very well represented by our Secretary of State. He could probably do an even better job than me. But who knows? We don't want to take any chances. So we're going to go and do that.
Don't take any chances, says you. So off he goes, fingers crossed and all of that. Who is decorating their homes for Iha Hauna already? It is often the decorations and all that, the kind of American version, but it's good American version of something, isn't it? We sent Halloween over to them, ourselves and the Scots, the Celts together in the 19th century, and they kind of sent it back to us with some improvements, which you'd realise if you've ever tried to carve a turnip for Halloween, the pumpkin is very, very handy. And there, it's wonderfully celebrated across Ireland, and already the kind of the festivals and the pumpkin patches are opening around the country. I'll give you a little flavour of some of them. If you're already up and doing it, by the way, 51551, because we met a woman last year who is decorating. She has a Christmas tree up all year round. Well, she has a tree and she decorates it per the season. There was a Halloween tree, which is quite spectacular, down in Cork, I think it was. Lugwood's Fall Festival in Saggart, nestled in the Dublin Mountains. Spooky festival filled with Halloween activities for visitors of all ages. They have an enchanted forest trail, spooky characters hanging around there, and you can gather your ingredients for the witch's potions, and then you can go on the Spookwood Express to the witch's camp. This sounds delightful. Finish your trip choosing your own pumpkin, as you often do. Tickets, 17 quid there for adults, 25 for children. You see, it's the reverse. It's more expensive for the kids because they get a pumpkin. Go to Kilkenny. Nore Valley Park is doing a lovely thing as well. They're transforming a thriving farm and camping site to a spooky pumpkin patch thing for Halloween. You get a tractor and trailer ride here. That'll be the joy here. They have go-karts as well, a bouncy castle, and they have animals in a kind of a petting area as well. 12 quid for the kids. It's hard to say, isn't it? Nore Valley Park in Kilkenny, and there's one down in Killa in East Cork, Joe's Farm Crisps, which are amazing crisps, by the way. And it's a family-run business. It opened the farm to families, and you can do your experience there, a visit. You can pick vegetables, learn about farming. It's more kind of educational, I think, that one. And they do delicious crisps as well. €22 for the pumpkin pickers, €10 if you don't want to bring a pumpkin home with you, basically. But you'll have a bit of crack and something to do for the weekend. Speaking of Halloween and spooky doings, Dolly Parton has risen from the dead. She wasn't dead at all in the end, turns out. Dolly Parton, you remember Frieda Parton, I was telling you, the sister, asked for prayers and everyone went, "What? Is she okay?" So Dolly Parton appeared in a video clip. At least we think it's Dolly.
Well, today's October the 8th and obviously I'm here, but I want you to know that I'm okay. I've got some problems, as I mentioned, back when my husband Carl was very sick. That was for a long time. And then when he passed, I didn't take care of myself. So I let a lot of things go that I should have been taking care of. So anyway, when I got around to it, the doctor said, "We need to take care of this. We need to take care of that." And I'm not ready to die yet. I don't think God is through with me, and I ain't done working.
I ain't done working, says 79-year-old Dolly Parton, good woman herself, beloved of her fans. Not unlike Swifties' dedication, levels of dedication towards Dolly, although Dolly's generosity towards her workers and the fans mean that she'd be kind of like Taylor Swift if Tay Tay was the head of a trade union, do you know what I mean? Where instead Taylor is kind of like if feminism and capitalism had a baby. That's where she is. That's her vibe. So Dolly's alive, I can tell you. Slane Castle, by the way, Slane Castle, hallowed ground of rock for generations upon generations. Thin Lizzy, Guns N' Roses, Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, Queen, incredible stuff. And it's going to sound a little bit more like this in 2026. Like a neon dream, it just don't know me. The bars in this guitar and long neck eyes, cold beard never broke my heart. Well, that's a bit of rock there, country rock. Beer never broke his heart. That is the sound of Luke Combs. The official announcement hasn't been done yet, but this Lancaster Instagram account put up a post early in the week and it showed a big crowd gathered at a concert projected across the castle, which was Luke Combs. And they also had the date, the 9th, which is today. So you can imagine that all but confirms a big Irish date for the American superstar, because country music fans enjoyed the number one grossing country star in terms of touring at the moment, Zach Bryan in Dublin in the summer there in Phoenix Park, which was amazing. So next year, the number two star would be coming to Slane, if these reports are all right, Luke Combs. But some of the papers, I see the Mirror here is framing it as disappointment for Oasis fans who were hoping for that to happen in Slane. And the headline in the Irish Sun, "I'm just a country boyne." See there? Very clever. But a picture of Luke Combs. Post Malone looking, actually, isn't he? That's what's going on. Victoria Beckham is everywhere in all of the press and all the news sites online, because there is a three-part Netflix series made by herself and her family, which follows up the self-aggrandizing documentary. I'm using documentary in inverted commas that David Beckham put out last year. Will they feature Luttrell's Town Castle up there in Castle Knock, where they got married? In the before times, in the pre around Celtic Tiger times. Two stars, I'm looking here in the Daily Telegraph. What do you give the couple that has everything? In the case of Netflix and the Beckhams, it's a set of his and hers docs. David went first 2 years ago. Now Victoria has a three-parter. The focus is on her fashion business. She comes across as likeable, self-deprecating, hard-working and funny, which is why it's such a shame the end product is so boring, says an early review. Here's Victoria Beckham feeling sorry for herself about how difficult it is to be rich and in business.
This has not been an easy ride. I mean, I'm lucky I've still got a business, and I'm not going to let it slip through my fingers again. But I do feel the pressure of that, and that's because I am still judged on every single level because of where I've come from.
Ah, the poor dote. The review here says there's a Brooklyn-shaped hole in this documentary. The Beckhams, other children, blah, blah, blah. They have walk-in appearances. Brooklyn and the wife, Nicola Peltz, daughter of the billionaire, are seen for only 4 seconds. And Brooklyn now, of course, completely estranged from his parents, if you're following that saga. It is an insult to call it a documentary because there's no journalism here. It's just PR. But has she done any harm to the world? No, she hasn't. So you can guilt-free enjoy binge-rotting this series. It's just called Victoria Beckham on Netflix. I really spent a lot of time thinking. I recommend the Charlie Sheen one, actually. That's warts and all. You know, I hate that using hackneyed phrases, but that's an incredible, incredible show. It's called AKA Charlie Sheen, because, of course, not his real name. One of the fun things from the posh Spice Girl documentary thing is that her business didn't go very well because there was too much extravagant spending, including flying in chairs from one side of the world to the other. Her favourite chair was flown on a plane. She also spent 80,000 a year on plants. A year, 80,000 every year on plants for her office, and paid someone 17 grand a year to water them. They must have been doing a very good job. She had to keep spending over and over again. Cristiano Ronaldo, by the way, speaking of rich people who have no problems, he is the first billionaire footballer joining sport, an elite group of billionaire athletes. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, Tiger Woods, Roger Federer. He's now a billionaire. Half of it was salary for football. The half of it is in sponsorship deals and so on. Of course, we know Ronaldo very well because Portugal are playing the boys in green on Saturday. Emphasis on boys. Although Ronaldo's presence often and his slowness is more of a hindrance to Portugal these days. Hopefully that helps us, but it probably won't, basically, will it? Someone is telling us John Lennon's birthday today. He was born on the 9th of October in 1940 in Liverpool, says Pamela Cork. Isn't that a good day, by the way, if we do have the peace and it all happens? That's John Lennon's birthday. And would you forgive a bit of mawkish music? It's not John Lennon, I'm sorry. But it's a day of peace. Why not have something ridiculously mawkish? It's better than the alternative, says you. This is from the 80s, 90s, somewhere like that. The sound of Annie Lennox and Al Green, Put a Little Love in Your Heart. It's from the movie Scrooged, would you believe? Which was a really, really fun film starring Bill Murray. Late 80s, I would say. Newell is on the text, says, just give it, kind of give it to him. Give Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. If it helps towards peace, just give it to him. I worry his ego won't take it if he doesn't get the prize and his interest in any negotiation would fall apart. I worry if they gave it to him tomorrow, he wouldn't be bothered with the ensuring the peace deal goes ahead. So you can't really win in this circumstance. 087-032-3232. That's the WhatsApp. You're going to enjoy our guest today. He's going to tell us how to rebuild a man in just a couple of nomade.